Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. reformationgear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, reformationgear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC. Coming off our interview with Joy Pullman of The Federalist, she has written the Wittenberg Trail feature in the latest Issues Etc. journal. Her story of coming from charismatic experience and background to the Lutheran confession is found there in the latest free online Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org and enter your email address, and we'll send you the latest journal. I've also written an article there. Finishing up my discussion of myths regarding the gospel. ISSUESETC.org. Look for the red subscription button. We've been walking through Luther's treatment of the Sermon on the Mount, and we kind of come to a turning point here where Luther says Jesus switches from teaching to life. And one of the first things he takes up is the subject of greed in Matthew chapter 6, beginning at verse 9, where he talks about treasures on earth and treasures in heaven. Joining us to continue our series on Martin Luther and the Reformation, Dr. Ken Sherb. He's pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Moberly, Missouri. He has a PhD in history from Ohio State University, formerly served as a theology professor at Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and as an assistant to the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Ken, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Good to talk to you today.
Here is the section that we're going to be dealing with, just a few verses here in Matthew chapter 6, where Jesus says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Before getting into particulars here, Luther kind of pauses in his treatment of the Sermon on the Mount here to give a very simple outline of Christ's preaching.
Yeah, it amazes me sometimes, as wordy as Luther can be, how he can also sometimes sum things up rather simply, as you say. And as he's about to go into what is really, in effect, the second half of his treatment of the Sermon on the Mount, and truly the second half of the text of the Sermon on the Mount, because we've got like 1.5 chapters behind us now, Matthew 5 and part of 6, and now we're going into the rest of 6 and 7, so we got 1.5 chapters ahead of us. He kind of takes stock of where we are. And he says, so far, Christ has denounced the false constructions that people had been placing on God's law, and in so doing, Christ was correcting teaching. And, of course, he was doing that for most of chapter 5, not the very first few verses of that chapter, but for most of chapter 5. And then in chapter 6, Christ opposed what Luther calls the glitter of false good works. And in so doing, he was correcting life and the manner of living. Now, from this point on, Luther says, Christ begins his warning against the temptations that are an obstacle to this teaching. And that's going to be the sustained note for the rest of the Sermon on the Mount and the rest of Luther's treatment of the Sermon on the Mount. So from here, the middle of chapter 6, more or less, on to the end of the sermon, Christ is going to be warning against temptations that prove to be some kind of a problem for people following his teaching.
The first subject that Luther notices in the treatment here is that of greed.
Yeah, because it's the first thing that Jesus talks about when he says, lay up for yourselves treasures, not on earth, where the moth and the rust and things are, but in heaven. And so Luther does talk about greed, and he says, where the gospel is taught and where people want to live by it, there always seem to be these two kinds of plagues, false teaching and what we're talking about here, greed that obstructs right living. Luther looks around him at the time, and he says, look, there are people right now who would have given the preachers of work righteousness huge sums back when we were under the papacy. But now that they don't have to give that kind of thing to earn their way into the good graces of God. They're clutching their pennies tightly in hand. And Luther kind of throws up his hands and says, I don't know what accounts for this, except to say it must be a plague from the devil himself. That's not a throwaway line, by the way, for Luther. He means it quite seriously. So Luther repeats, and actually augments a little bit. He says, there are two most dangerous and corrupting forces in Christendom, I suppose you might say in general, Todd. Spiritually, Luther says, it is the false teaching that corrupts faith, and physically, it is the greed that corrupts the fruit of faith. And greed, Luther says, is not to be underestimated. It is a dangerous vice that sticks to a person. It can put on a good front and make such a fine impression that it deceives even Christians, so that no one can feel secure against it. We have greed deeply ingrained into us. It's part of our original sinful nature. And it's not just those who have a lot who want that much more. Luther kind of makes an example in particular of poor preachers. Preachers maybe who are being notoriously underpaid. I mean, these are people who truly, really have few possessions. But they become so fixed on getting something more than what they've got that they end up neglecting their ministries, and some, Luther says, completely surrender the gospel. So this is a problem for everybody, clergy as well as lay.
And he talks about the connection between property and wealth and what he would, or what Christ calls, the moth and the thief.
Yeah, Christ is preaching, Luther says, against the great idol of mammon. And he says, the treasures that you have here on earth are subject to moth and rust and thieves. And of course, Luther says, that's more than just literal moths and rust and people taking your stuff in kind of an overt way. This can take many forms. The big wigs at court who can clean out a prince's treasury, or swindlers who devote public funds into their own coffers, even unfaithful servants who do not diligently perform the duties that they're getting paid for, in effect not giving a fair day's work for a fair day's wage. Luther says the fact is, wherever there is money and property, there must also be moths and thieves that are after it. And actually, Luther says, what do we expect? If we don't use our money rightly, if we're not being generous and giving with people out of the possessions that God has given to us, entrusted into our care, we don't deserve anything better. And then, like the Old Testament prophets who like to point out how impotent the idols truly are, you know, you think of Isaiah talking about those who would carve themselves an image and then bow down and worship what they had just carved. Well, Luther says, now you see what a fine god mammon is. The best guards and courtiers he can assemble are moth and rust.
Is it then entirely wrong to have treasures?
Yeah, Luther kind of anticipates this question. He knows, as he's going on like this in his sermon, somebody's going to sort of think that, maybe even raise that question out loud after the sermon's over. So he just anticipates it and says, well, I'll ask it. Is it wrong to have treasures? And Luther notes that princes do need to have provisions for their lands, provisions for their people. Solomon in the Old Testament had such. And he even notes, Luther does, that Christ himself and his disciples had a treasury. And so in order to address this question about whether it's wrong to have treasures at all, Luther makes recourse to a point that he has raised several times in explaining the Sermon on the Mount. He says, a sharp distinction must be made between the Christian and the man of this world.
So how do we take that apart, the Christian and the man of this world?
Well, a Christian for himself should be willing to give freely, should be selfless. But on the other hand, wearing the official hat of being a father or a mother, or perhaps being a governing official, or having some kind of position, however exalted it may be in the eyes of society, where other people are depending on you, that's a little bit different. So Luther says something in this connection that we might find surprising right off. He says, a prince can be a Christian, but he must not rule as a Christian. And Luther explains, the person is indeed a Christian, but his office or his princedom does not involve his Christianity. Now, that is a very big difference, Todd, from what we might hear a lot of people saying in today's politics and society in our country, how a Christian's in a better position to be a ruler. Luther says, no, the things that a ruler does as a ruler are things that God would expect of any person in that position. Being wise, defending innocent life, defending the country and citizens, speaking up for justice, doing the right thing in all these circumstances. Those are not just responsibilities incumbent upon Christians. It would be incumbent upon anybody in that situation. God doesn't have two different laws, one for Christians to follow and one for everybody else. So in this connection, Luther goes on, for his own person as a Christian, in terms of the Sermon on the Mount, a person is not to do injury at all, but to put up with injustices. But as a prince, that same person is called upon to do differently. As a prince, he's got to be concerned about justice and order in this world, and he's not supposed to tolerate such things as injustice and disorder. But as a Christian, Luther says, he does not have to be bothered with the world, but should direct his thoughts, I'm quoting here, exclusively to another life. That person of mine who is called Christian should not worry about money or save it, but should give the heart to God alone. But outwardly, Luther says, I may and I should use temporal goods for my body and for the needs of other people. And think about the needs of other people. One of the things Luther says here is that every person should earn enough money to support himself without being a burden on other people, and have enough money also to be able to actively help others. So Luther says, in your outward and secular life, you may lay up as much as your relation with God and your honesty permits, not for your own pleasure and greed, but for the need of other people. And I think that's a point worthy of lingering over for just a moment, Todd. He says, in your outward and secular life, you may lay up as much as your relation with God and your honesty permits. Contrary to a lot of caricature, Luther did not say that the quote-unquote secular person somehow gets out from under the lordship of God, or that the Lord has kind of abdicated his rule in the so-called kingdom of the left. No, there too, one has to be responsive to God, one is certainly responsible to God, and one is certainly under the law of God.
Dr. Ken Sherb is our guest, part 50 of our series on Martin Luther and the Reformation, dealing with the Sermon on the Mount. Talk about treasures in heaven and greed. What's the result of out-of-control greed, according to Luther? We'll answer that after this.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Lord, help us ever to retain the catechism's doctrine plain.
What makes a church unique? Perhaps we should ask what makes a church faithful. Calvary Lutheran Church of Elgin, Illinois continually learns Christ's doctrine, simply explained in the small catechism. This doctrine teaches us Christ crucified, who even today comes and serves his baptized children in word and sacrament to forgive, strengthen, and teach us for daily life. This, Christ's own work among us, makes and keeps Calvary Lutheran Church faithful. Visit us at clce.org.
When a Christian woman is critical of her own flesh, she holds her Creator in contempt.
Rose Adel, from her new book, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Our Heavenly Father knit us together in the womb. He did not do a bad job. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. Psalm 139:14. That goes for everyone, including the one who thinks she's the ugliest of them all.
You can purchase and download Concordia Publishing House's new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically, at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Continuing education for the Confessional Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Christians young and old are increasingly pressured to change their beliefs. That's why St. Jude said we need to contend for the faith once for all delivered to the saints. At the San Antonio Worldview Conference, Confessional Lutherans Jonathan Fisk, Jay Weber, Ryan McPherson, and Craig Parton will unmask the false, direct us to Christ and His Word, and defend the faith. The San Antonio Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 11th, San Antonio, Texas. Visit worldusa.org. worldusa.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkins. Dr. Ken Cherb is our guest. He is pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Moberly, Missouri, has a PhD in history from Ohio State University. He's walking us through our multi-part series on Martin Luther and the Reformation, part 50 today, dealing with Luther on the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6, beginning at verse 19, where Luther deals with treasures in heaven, treasures on earth, and the subject of greed. Ken, for Luther, what was the result of out-of-control greed?
Yeah, Luther says sometimes people are so consumed with greed, they just can't stop themselves. And what happens? Well, even if the people who lay up treasures properly, you know, like a Solomon, still see attacks on what they have accumulated from things like moth and rust and thieves, then how much more will this happen to people who seek nothing but the money, Luther says. And again, he kind of takes on a sarcastic role like the Old Testament prophets. And he says, what sort of God is it that it is not even capable of defending itself against moth and rust? You see, what Luther is doing here, he's kind of treating mammon, money as it were, as a sort of archetypical idol. And when you think about it, that makes a lot of sense. On the one hand, mammon seems to be so powerful, so commanding a force in the lives of so many people that it gets everybody's attention. It virtually runs the world. And yet, at the same time, in all reality, mammon itself stands helpless. It can be victimized by moth and rust and thieves with the greatest of ease. Now, all of that, Todd, is basically Luther's exposition just of one verse, Matthew 6:19, about the moth and the rust and so forth.
So he talks about Christians needing courage to face the world's rejection in connection with Christ's words, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Explain that for us.
Yeah, that's why Jesus wants us to lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven, because we are going to meet with problems as Christians in this world. Not only are we going to suffer potentially the loss of our money the way other people do, moth and rust and thieves and so forth, but we're also going to endure attack from the world simply because we are Christians. And so Jesus is intent upon getting our hearts to be where they really should be. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, but rather lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. So it's in effect like Christ telling his redeemed people, do not let your hearts be enthralled here. Luther kind of paraphrases. He says, if you occupy an office or a status that requires you to deal with heavenly treasure, well, do not cling to it or serve it. Rather, take it as your goal to acquire those treasures which have been set aside for you in heaven. It's a matter of the heart and the treasure going together.
He cites Luke 12, the parable of the rich man.
Yeah, because he says, despite Jesus' warnings, the world is still not going to listen. The world will, in so many cases, cling to what glitters. And in that connection, Jesus' own parable of the rich fool in Luke 12 is very instructive. This is the guy, you know, who counted on having good days, even better days. His biggest problem, as far as he could see when the parable opens, is that he just doesn't have enough places to store all of his stuff. And so he wants to tear down the storehouses he's got, put up even bigger and better barns, and lay up for himself all kinds of treasure that will take care of him for the foreseeable future. However, that very night, his soul is required of him. And Luther says, then he lost the real treasure. He lost heaven. And he had to surrender the property he had accumulated. Luther goes on to note that great fortunes very often are not accumulated in what you might call a way that pleases God. And so therefore, it shouldn't surprise us that they are dissipated in such a way that really nobody knows where it all went. It's all vanished and gone, and where in the world did it go? So echoing the Old Testament again, Luther says, a man is a silly fool if he makes all his confidence and his happiness depend upon the wealth he has saved, torturing himself all his life with cares and worries, and yet not knowing for whom he has been accumulating it. It's kind of like Solomon in Ecclesiastes saying, boy, I've gotten all this stuff, and yet when I die, who in the world is going to get it? Who's going to inherit it all? If it manages to remain intact, all of my inheritance, fine. If it goes into several different pieces and parts, who's going to end up with it? Could be somebody wise. It could be a fool. And Luther meditates on this. And he says, as an alternative to all that, just let the world go. And remember the preaching which you have heard as a Christian. It has told you where you should plan to have and find your treasure, where it will be secure for you, and where it will remain forever without ever being transferred to someone else.
And what does he make of those words? Where your treasure is, your heart will be also.
Well, actually, there was a common expression at Luther's time that Luther points out here, because it's very similar. The expression then was, what is dear to a man, that is his God. And of course, I'm sure Luther liked that expression because it so very much summed up what he himself said, for example, in his explanation in the Catechism of the First Commandment. Luther goes on to advise, so take a look at your own heart. And you will soon find out what has stuck to it and where your treasure is. If your treasure lies in Christ, you will risk loss. You will risk the destruction of goods in this world in order to aim at that surpassing treasure in heaven. But if, on the other hand, your treasure really lies in this world, then it's amazing how foolish people can be. You'll be willing to bring down God's own wrath upon yourself, Luther says, before you'll give up a penny. And yet, thinking of Psalm 2, he says, he who sits in the heavens laughs. He will speak in his wrath and terrify with his fury. This is no laughing matter. Like I said, mammon as an idol is nothing to be underestimated. And so Luther is very serious about this section of the Sermon on the Mount, which, of course, is going to go on. Luther is going to follow Christ as he talks more about possessions and seeking first the kingdom of God. But for the moment, it's really summed up in what Jesus said in Matthew 6:21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Dr. Ken Sherb is pastor of Zion Lutheran Church in Moberly, Missouri. He has a Ph.D. in history from Ohio State University, formerly served as a theology professor at Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and as an assistant to the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Ken, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure, Todd. I treasure these opportunities to be with you.
Folks, Reformation Studies is just one of the emphases offered with Concordia University Irvine's Master of Arts in Theology program. Courses there are taught online and in intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. You can find out more about their degree program at cui.edu/theology. That's cui.edu/theology. The Master of Arts in Theology program at Concordia University Irvine. We're doing a series on the conscience. Part two is ahead on the other side of the break. We've talked about what the conscience is. Now we're going to talk about four things your conscience knows and four things that can inform your conscience. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Mark Lutheran, Edmond, Oklahoma. Emmanuel Lutheran, Manchester, New Hampshire. University Lutheran Chapel, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Freedom, Pennsylvania. Holy Cross Lutheran, O'Fallon, Missouri. St. Paul Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. Christ Lutheran, Rochester, Minnesota. Holy Cross Lutheran, Carlisle, Iowa. St. Peter's Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. And Grace Lutheran, Wellsville, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.